It's always great to have him on in his monthly spot. You know him well, President and CEO, one of the great firms around for a long time, beginning year number 88, right here in the metropolitan area here on Long Island, based out of Melville, with 7 locations in and around New Jersey and New York. Talking about the great H2M Architects and Engineers, leading firm of its kind, leading president of its kind, and running the show in fine, fine fashion always, is my very good friend, Mr. Richard Human. Sir, how are you? Welcome aboard.
Jay, good morning. Doing great. I need to, I'm probably going to start calling you up every morning just to feel a little better about myself. Thanks for the intro.
Oh, come on now. Like anyone feels anything different about you? Come on. What's the matter with you? How have you been? How's things going? What's going on?
Things are good. Things are good. I think, you know, every week things are starting to get a little bit better. Opportunities, I think, are continuing to come our way. I think economically things are going in the right direction and strengthening. There's more brightness, I think, moving forward. So I'm optimistic.
Me too. You know, I'm hearing some of the experts now as far as, you know, herd immunity is concerned, a little bit sooner, possibly. You know, you got the vaccine locations up and running. You got more pop-ups, seems to be, on a weekly basis now. You just got to get the medicine here. But it seems like, you know, there's a little bit of light now in all avenues, Rich, as far as the end of some very dark tunnels in and around, you know?
Yeah, there's, you know, I feel as though, you know, in the areas where we can move forward, we are moving forward, but we're still kind of stuck in the mud on a, I think, a couple of kind of key areas, and small businesses continue to struggle. You know, I'd love to see more movement there. And, you know, I know it's not for a lack of being committed, but, you know, it's still slow, you know, and hopefully they, you know, debate and pass a package, because I think that, you know, some rescue is still needed. You know, I don't know if I'd be into the whole thing, but clearly, you know, there's, you know, rescue dollars that need to get to small businesses.
Of course, the sticking point is that $15 minimum wage. And, you know, you look at everything that's transpired from the riots, January the 6th, seems like a year ago almost. But really, you know, we're just talking about 6 weeks or whatever it is. But in essence, you know, it's kind of held things up here. You know, they're banding about negotiations. It's very slow. We know the division that represents itself as far as Washington is concerned. But really, you know, it's that $15 deal right now that has rankled so many here. That's a real point of contention.
Yeah. I mean, there's other stuff in the bill too, and that's, you know, unfortunately, that's SOP, right? That's congressional SOP, and it's, people look at opportunities to fund certain programs that they otherwise wouldn't be able to get funded, and they know that it's, at the end of the day, when you're getting money to struggling people, people know it's tough to say no. So, you know, what better opportunity to go ahead and include some things that, you know, aren't specific to helping all of us get through the pandemic. So that, you know, the compromise is there, but there are absolutely some sticking points. That's one of them. And, you know, I think at least a couple of the Democratic senators are not in favor of it. But, you know, we'll see where it goes. You know, I heard they were going to pull it out, and then, you know, the latest thing I heard is that it was still in. So I guess we'll have to see. But one way or another, you know, Congress takes it up this week, and you know, they need to figure out a way to approve something and help those that are struggling the most.
And you look at the bill. I mean, it's there. It's expensive. $1.9 trillion. You know, you're looking at $1,400 checks here. You know, you look at the struggles. You know, we just had a guy on in Gene Cook, who laid out the landscape in Huntington Rich. We hadn't checked into Huntington in a while. You know, the struggles are all over. I mean, it's real. Businesses need help here. You know, it's about time that we do something. We can't wait any longer. And, you know, you just hate to see each week going by. You know, we're at the end of February, pretty much. We're going to get into March next week. And, you know, listen, right now we just can't wait anymore. And people have to step it up.
Yeah, you know, the one of the things that I was just checking out of the weekend was how much funding's been allocated and been unspent in some of the past CARES Acts. And, you know, I understand, you know, how they appropriate, you know, their funding for all these different things. But, you know, as they're now talking about another $1.9 trillion, I'd like to hope that somebody is in there. If they were, you know, allocating prior, you know, CARES Act funding in ways that weren't able to move money to the people that needed it, and that needs to be, you know, kind of reevaluated and reassessed, then that should be happening. It, you know, I have a tough time wrapping my head around, you know, there's so much, you know, uncommitted dollars that have already been authorized by Congress, and now you have another 1.9 on top of that. You know, it's clearly not the most efficient process when these monster, you know, monster funding packages get put together.
Something has to be put in play. Let's go over some of the big events over the last couple of weeks. Obviously, here in the state, it is all focused now around the governor and how he has handled the nursing homes. Since we have spoken, the AG came out with kind of a surprise report against a party affiliate and that of the governor. As far as the undercount is concerned, you've had judges with decisions coming up in 5 days come clean. You know, you've had the FOIL lawsuits coming into play from the Empire Center and others. You have had some pretty big-time backlash here against this governor. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, who knows? You have investigations. You have the FBI now investigating, Department of Justice. You know, the blame game is over here. It's about coming clean. Interesting events from a guy who was way back in time bandied about as being a candidate to battle Joe Biden for the presidency. His name was out there. It's been a whirlwind over the last couple of weeks, though, in this state.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's you know, you've got, you know, the families of 15,000 plus seniors that passed away that are, you know, continuing to kind of relive this. And, you know, there's a reality to the fact that, you know, they can question whether or not they needed to you know, lose people in their family. You know, and in the end, the pandemic was raging at the time. And, you know, there were so many moving pieces. I'm sure decision-making was challenging. But, you know, in the end, from a leadership perspective, you know, if you make a decision, it doesn't work out the right way, you have to own the decision. And, you know, it does nobody any good to not do that and to, you know, shift responsibilities after the fact when, you know, you were clearly, you know, taking a, you know, the buck stops here position for months and months through the pandemic and getting lauded for it. So, you know, I don't know where it's going to end up. And it's unfortunate that, you know, people really still have to kind of fight to get information. You know, I it's just not good, Jay. It's not a good situation. It's not a good situation for him. It's not a good situation for us. Clearly not a good situation for the families at all. So, I mean, we'll have to see how it plays out, but it is, it's a very hot topic clearly right now.
When you think about it, a lot of people, you know, I was with some gatherings over the weekend and, you know, I was trying to explain that the reason why it is such an egregious mistake made by Albany at the time, New York was the epicenter here. And with all the numbers coming in, they working with the federal government to try and formulate a plan. And think about, if you're not giving the accurate information, you pretty much have stalled as far as what the accomplishment could be in fighting this virus. That's why this thing is so egregious. You know, forget the fact that although it's serious regarding when you underreport numbers, because you're not doing yourself any good as far as the families and everything else are concerned, of ones that passed away, but just from a national standpoint, you are the center of it all. You are the manager of the state. You are not reporting accuracy in this regard. And, you know, you can only think about the disruption in trying to formulate a plan on the national front. I mean, that's why this thing is so serious. A lot of people don't understand that aspect.
Yeah, you know, what's really interesting about that, Jay, is if you think back to, you know, April, May last year, the relationship between the state and the federal government was cooperative. You know, you had, there were compliments going back and forth back then. And, you know, there's absolutely no reason why that cooperation should not have continued. And, you know, when you're in the middle of fighting back the fire, it's all hands on deck. And, you know, rarely does politics find its way into that kind of a situation. And then, you know, things calm down. And then you start to see the political posturing come into play. And then, you know, the consequence is what you just described. You know, and again, it did no one any good to not continue to be cooperative and work together. Clearly, the state needed the feds. The feds needed information from the state. And it should have been a much more collaborative effort between the you know the state and the feds, but it wasn't, and you know it clearly was a critical mistake.
We're talking with Rich Human, CEO, President, H2M Architects and Engineers. I'm always fascinated in the world of politics why one can never admit mistake. You know, it's like taking ownership. I think a lot of this would have been alleviated if you would have admitted that a mistake was made about letting the COVID positives back in from the hospitals into those facilities, which made no sense. I mean, even if you are worried as far as the beds and everything else, availability of the hospitals, why would you do that if you knew the most vulnerable to this illness or that of senior citizens? It made no sense at all. That's a whole nother question that has to be attacked. But, you know, sometimes a politician, even the magnitude of an Andrew Cuomo, to admit a mistake, to create accountability, no contrition at all involved in this, no apologies to the families. I mean, that, to me, only accentuates the issue.
Yeah, you know, there's that's a fundamental element of strong leadership is nobody ever always gets it right. It just doesn't happen. And, you know, mistakes in decision-making, there's not a person around that can say they've never made a mistake in decision-making. And to, you know, not own it, you know, typically what happens is, you know, is as soon as it can be owned, it gives you an opportunity to reflect and reassess and usually move in a better direction. But if you're really reluctant to recognize a mistake that's made in decision making, it kind of perpetuates a bad situation. And you know, look, I don't know the details at all. I don't know you know, the guidance that he got or any of those things. But, you know, in the end, you know, when you're sitting at the top, it does come to you, for better or for worse. That's how it goes. And, you know, I would have hoped that that there would have been a greater ability to just kind of, you know, recognize that it was a mistake, and you know, what can we learn from that? How can we do better from that? And we've lost that.
Well, without question about it. No question. We got to get that back, and we got to get it back quick. Rich Heumann with us. Rich, talk to me about the goings-on here on the island you know, we try for recovery of some sort and try and make some big-time gains that we have lost. You are kind of right there as far as the projects and everything else. Give us a little bit of the landscape of what we're hearing right now.
Well, I think that you know, unemployment continues to improve, and you know, where I think nationally, you know, a hair above 6% in unemployment, so that's really positive. I think local national, it's been improving. You know, there's continues to be lots of talk for infrastructure. We know that. You know, both counties are taking on, you know, major infrastructure initiatives, which is great. You know, major development projects continue to move forward. You know, and I think, you know, whether there's you know, some more confidence that when this next rescue package gets passed, that, you know, state and local governments are going to be able to fill whatever budget holes are created by, you know, loss of revenue, that's going to be key. And I think, you know, that's growing. I think it's growing in the leadership locally that, you know, money's going to be coming. I think that there were a lot of, you know, difficult decisions made in both counties to, you know, try to stay as fiscally healthy as they could. So that's positive, and you still have people investing in the region, you know. So that's, you know, if you take a look at just a number of the economic indicators, you know, from March up until now, you know, it was just a tremendous drop off for a period of about, you know, a month and a half, and then, you know, things started to slowly work their way back, you know. But I still believe there's got to be major focus from government's perspective to support and prop back up, you know, those industries that were most heavily hit, and you know, lots of businesses that aren't going to recover from that. So the obligation of government to go ahead and work with those businesses to make them viable again, I think is going to be a critical piece of this. And, you know, I know they're aware of it. I know they're thinking about it. I know they're trying to put things in place to look for the right ways to be supportive of, you know, the small businesses or even some of the bigger businesses in certain industries. You know, tourism in particular and hospitality are still, you know, major struggle areas, and they're big parts of the Long Island economy. So there needs to be commitment there in addition to the other things that we're doing.
I think that's the key regarding small businesses. You know, just reading some of the experts as far as what they had to say, you know, with the benefits, which I know rose, I think it was 13% last week, whatever it was, even, and that's right here on the island, even as many other regions in the state saw some slight decreases in jobless claims. And, you know, just in trying to analyze it, you got a high percentage of small businesses in our area compared to other parts of the state. And that's why we're kind of feeling it a little bit more. We know how vital, and we talked about it since day one, how vital, you know, Main Streets are as far as the economy, especially here on the island.
Yeah, and you've got, you know, so many of us, and you know, I'm included, have, you know, been forced to, you know, find new ways to go about, you know, getting our consumables, and how do we go about doing that? And, you know, everybody orders everything online now. So you've got a, you know, whole retail sector that got hit hard. What is that going to look like even moving forward? You know, when the pandemic's behind us, is if the consumers are going to continue to go about how they purchase their goods and services the way that they've been forced to do it through the pandemic, then you frankly need a shift in your approach to supporting these kind of small businesses. And, you know, that's to be seen. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like. And, you know, it'll be interesting. I know that local government, you know, continues to try to encourage all of us to, you know, shop local, buy local. I don't know how effective that's been, at least during this time. And, you know, they'll be committed to encouraging all of us to, you know, get back to supporting Main Street. And hopefully we do. And, you know, because I think we have to. I think we owe it to ourselves as a local economy to do that.
No question. And we got to keep thinking that way. Otherwise, this is not going to work. So very important concept right there. Rich Heumann with us, H2M Architects and Engineers, the firm. We will come back, sir, after some words of importance, and we'll come right back next to the CEO and the president. Amanda, let's take a quick look in our travels here on a Back to Work Monday at 8:29 and change. We get the latest from Nancy Remy. And we're back. Richard Heumann with us. He is the president and CEO of one of the longest standing companies. They started way back in 1933, ladies and gentlemen, beginning year 88. H2M Architects and Engineers. Rich, also a proud member of the Hop Hog Industrial Association, which has become as vital as anyone. Especially when it comes to business, and they're right here in our backyards. You know, you think about HI, you think about Silicon Valley, they the engines as far as business and economic activity. Rich, what is the latest laid out for us regarding the HIA? How are we doing? What are we looking like going forward here?
There's a lot of great stuff happening in the Innovation Park, Jay. And I think for the organization, getting through 2020 was tough, you know, and we had to tighten ourselves up and, you know, continue to provide critical information and value to members. And I think that the group did a fantastic job with that. And, you know, we're really assessing what 2021 is going to look like. You know, a lot of the great events that the organization puts on, you know, are going to continue to be hampered, and we're going to have to be nimble and, you know, prepare ourselves to, you know, take advantage as best we can of what the circumstances are when, you know, it comes time to put on some of these events. We still want to do it and, you know, continue to provide the kind of connections that that the members have really, you know, grown accustomed to and during this critical time have been relying on. You know, at the same time, you know, we work closely with the town of Smithtown. You know, their work in, you know, creating a rezoning to allow some mixed-use redevelopment in the park is huge. You know, if you think about you know, just the, you know, the concept of an industrial park and how people perceive that. And, you know, by going through great efforts and putting some great information together and demonstrating the fact that the Innovation Park is the second largest industrial park in the country behind Silicon Valley, you know, it's a national innovation park, and it's got fantastic potential. So, you know, the fact that there are so many different stakeholders that are recognizing the value of the Innovation Park and are looking to do what they can in order to unleash a lot of the potential, I think is fantastic. It's great for the region, and, you know, it's been an economic engine for decades. It'll continue to be so. So, you know, I'm glad to be able to support the organization and you know, bring the things that I can in order to help the Innovation Park, you know, move forward, evolve, you know, become a nationally leading 21st century innovation park. I think that's critical, and you know, we're going to see the benefits, and, you know, as the years progress, the things that are going to be going on in the Innovation Park are going to be so important for the region. So I'm looking forward to it.
It's the outlook looks very strong. You're right. You know, you get through this, what everybody has endured, you know, you can kind of get through anything. Does HI have any plans as far as the Brentwood show over in at the sport and college campus there? Are they looking at a another round? Where are they looking at right now?
You know, just keeping flexible, you know, pursuing that. If there's a way that that an in-person event can happen, we'd clearly love to do that. You know, but if not, there are some other things that the organization is doing to, you know, create connections, business connections, you know, actively working on a virtual marketplace that will allow, you know, companies to interact with each other virtually, you know, and looking to really innovate how you go about creating these kind of connections for businesses. You know, there are a lot of small businesses, a lot of service businesses, manufacturing businesses in the park, and, you know, HIA needs to continue to be committed to doing the things that it can in order to help those businesses move themselves forward. So, I mean, you know, we'll see. I'm hoping. I mean, I love that event. I think it's a great event. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, pretty shortly we'll have to make a decision on how we go about, you know, that event. You know, it's normally coming up, you know, in the next few months. So
it was one of my favorite events right at the end of May, no question about it. The project's continuing. I like what I'm seeing over in Belmont, the USB Arena for the Islanders coming into play next year. I'm looking at some of the other projects in and around the hub of, as far as Nassau is concerned, around the new Coliseum, the Ronkonkoma hub. You've done some great work out in the Hamptons area and everything else, but kind of business as usual. These projects are vital, and it's good to see their finishing touches being applied here.
Yeah, you know, that to me, those kind of projects continue to be great indicators for us. And, you know, a lot of those projects, you know, they might have slowed a little bit as the pandemic was you know, really in its full force here, and we figured out how to continue moving these projects forward, still having to comply with all the guidance to you know, keep workers safe. So our ability to adapt, I think, regionally has been great. And, you know, and think about some of the other things. You know, financing is still really, really effective right now. And, you know, there's an encouragement for, you know, developers to continue to move forward, to get their financing and to keep projects moving. You know, we're starting to see more of that. I would say we went through a period for the better part of last year where a lot of projects kind of recoiled and got pulled back. And, you know, we're starting to see those projects move forward again. The infrastructure commitment has always been there. You know, you continue to hear and read about, you know, communities understanding the importance of sewering in order to promote growth and economic development in their communities, to repurpose and redevelop communities. So, you know, we see and hear about all of that, and it clearly feeds into optimism for 2021. That, you know, these projects are going to continue to move, and I think you're going to end up seeing more of them.
You know, that's a good point regarding you know, the sewering and the infrastructure and the water quality, and you see what's happening now with, you know, these lawsuits at Bethpage, Calverton, big issues on the line regarding what, you know, issues that were never attacked for decades and now finally coming into play now. But this is all in the development as far as the island is concerned going forward, Rich.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You know, when people do a really good job at what they're responsible for, you know, the public at large doesn't need to be concerned. They, even if they're informed, you know, they think that things are being taken care of for them. And, you know, for the most part, when it comes to things like water quality, we were doing a fantastic job of, you know, making sure that, you know, clean drinking water was you know, being delivered to people. And, you know, with some of these, you know, kind of recent revelations on a big level about, you know, groundwater contamination, how we're dealing with that, you know, the public sees it, they know. And, you know, it's really refreshing to see, you know, the authorities that have the ability to hold, you know, polluters responsible and accountable are doing that, because if they don't, then the burden falls to taxpayers. And you know, you're seeing that now. You're seeing, you know, recently some, you know, some articles and some news reports about, you know, cost increases for people, for their drinking water. And the reason for that is, you know, until they can hold, you know, chemical companies or water supply or polluters accountable and make them financially responsible, they need to go ahead and put expensive treatment systems in. And that burden is going to be continue to be borne by us until, you know, we can have responsible parties pay their fair share. So it's going to be a front of mind topic, I think, for a while now. You're going to continue to see a bunch of that because, you know, there's the strong push to, you know, not have the cost to do these things completely borne by taxpayers. So we'll see how that goes.
You know, you look at the remote way of doing business now. You know, it seems like many are accustomed to this type of process. And I'm just wondering what the business world is going to be looked at upon, let's say a year from now. You know, do we go back to pre-pandemic days? Have we gotten used to this aspect as far as doing business this way? Is it good for life in general, even by ways of the business world, the way it's kind of situated upon us at this point in time? Where do you think we go if you fast forward the clock? And you're the right guy to ask this because, you know, you've been involved in remote type of ways as well, forced into. But where do we go about a year from now? Do we get back to normal in the sense of getting people back into the office? Or is it a way of economic means to kind of keep going in this type of manner? Where do we go as far as the business sense?
So I think there's numbers of different things in you know, kind of the broader sense of business that are going to be affected by this positively in most cases. And I think that, you know, one of them is that we've demonstrated an ability to be remote, to have a remote workforce and still, you know, effectively and productively get our job done. And, you know, for us, a lot of our success is based on collaborative teamwork. And, you know, before the pandemic hit, you know, if you asked me if we could be effective doing that kind of business with all of our team members remote, you know, my likely answer would have been, you know, not a chance in the world. You know, I would say that sense has been proven wrong. And we know we can do it. So I think the ability, once the pandemic is over, to have remote work be either an enhanced employee benefit, an ability to go ahead and access talent in a different way. You know, so talent doesn't need to, you know, live close to an office. Talent can be someplace else. So for a company like ours that is you know, continuing to look to grow and frankly has a limited reach in where to find talent, our commitment to remote work is going to allow us to have a much further reach to try to find talent here. So I think there's a great opportunity for us there. I also believe that, decisions that people have had to make in the past about, career versus family, historically, that's been a very difficult decision for people. And people have had to compromise and sacrifice their professional life for their family life. So, and as part of that, you lose talent. You invest in people and, you run risk of losing those people. So now I think you're going to have a much greater opportunity to retain your talent and provide flexibility in how they go about getting their job done, whether it's where they work, the hours they work. There's going to be big benefit there for us also. So I'm looking at the successes that we've had in flexible work and remote work as, just a broadening of our approach to successfully execute our business here. And it's clearly here to stay. We've all invested a lot in our ability to be able to have our employees work remotely, and there's no reason to just pull the plug on that. I think you just need to optimize it, enhance it, and use it in a way that can not only make your business stronger, but can also provide some more benefit for your employees.
Interesting. And you guys have been way back as far as the innovators hiring year-round and everything else. And you are still finding some very key people to grow the company, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. 2020 was challenging in general. And we went into 2020 anticipating another strong growth year. And we grew a bit, much less than we had planned. But our confidence in 2021 has grown from last year. So, our plans this year are to probably, hire, another 60 or 65 new staff members throughout all of our office locations. A number of those are very strategic, and we've got a very robust recruiting program in place to, do the best we can to find some really strong talent. And, a lot of our ability to grow is going to be based on our ability to attract. So, we're going to stay as aggressive as we can to try to find good talent and to bring it in.
Do you still feel Long Island, Rich Human, is a viable place? We know the exiting of so many from the city, and a lot of people have migrated out to the East End. We know about home sales and everything else, which is encouraging. But we also have word that a lot of people are fed up. They're looking at the tax structure. They're looking at the overall, everyday living situation here on the island. The pandemic certainly did not help. If this was even prior pandemic, as far as people exiting, are you confident, though, that Long Island will be, and they're in the midst of rebuilding, no question, but it's a matter of keeping people here. Are you confident people will, kind of grow their families and businesses here? Do we get back to that?
Yeah, I am. I believe that, with some of the cost of living and the taxes here, the positives greatly outweigh the negatives, I believe. There's going to be great opportunities for us to go ahead and, continue to kind of grow and evolve Long Island. And when we need to do that, and I think you see that. You see that in lots of communities. From a business perspective, there are clearly those businesses that have seen even greater benefit of their employees being able to work remotely. If you believe that your business needed to be, say, in New York City in order to, be effective and be successful, and now you've gone through a pandemic and you've seen that that's not the case, it is very easy to have certain industries relocate and still have strong presence. So, for business like ours, we can't do that. I mean, our clients are local, and the projects that that we perform are in this Northeast region. So I think the opportunities for businesses to relocate, I think, will be difficult unless they're in, you know, a few select industries. But as far as you know, having our young professionals stay, you know, have families, live, I still think it's a fantastic place to be. I believe that the the local elected officials understand that and are committed to it. The ability for us to be open and discuss the needs that we need to bring to our communities continues to be, I think, very healthy here. So, you know, I'm still optimistic for us, and there's really no reason why, you know, we can't continue to be a very desirable place for especially young professionals to live and to raise families.
Yeah, and you know, I was watching an interview last week between the governor and one of the island's biggest real estate developers, that being Scott Reckler. And you know, I mean, I do agree. You know, we talk about affordable housing, affordable apartments, New York City. God knows what the city is going to need to get it back to where it was. But it's about reviving the economy, and you must attract young workers. That is going to be the key. You must keep people here in some sort of fashion. That's always been the formula, Rich, you know, just trying to make sure that young people thrive here, because that is really the basis for growth when you think about it, you know?
Yeah, and you know, you hit it square on, Jay. I believe we're all committed to that, and we need to continue to be committed to that. So, the perspective of all of us, you know, needs to be broader. You know, we owe it to future generations to make good decisions and to provide, the type of housing stock that young professionals are looking for. Things are changing. We need to continue to be as in front of the change as possible, to continue to be proactive as much as we can. If you wait until the demand is so great to react, then, you know, you've lost already. So a lot of the things that we're doing here in Nassau and Suffolk County very much support the recognition of keeping our young professionals and our next generation here, working here, living here, contributing here, and you know, that's how you're going to sustain this Long Island region.
You know, I always like to throw a couple of little things at you regarding your beloved Mets and Jets. You know, you're a couple of days away from position players reporting. Spring training, always a lot of fun pitches and catches there already. But the outlook for your beloved Mets, you know, a lot of people are saying they're going to have a great year. I think Vegas put them at 92 and change as far as over-under and wins. That's impressive. It comes down to pitching, though. Are you confident your team can prevail? That is a very tough division. I see that division as one of the most competitive of divisions in baseball. What do you think?
I agree, and that's before you just said what you said. That's what I was going to say. They strengthened the team for sure. But I think it's difficult to be optimistic. Maybe as the year grows and they perform the way that we all think they should perform, then optimism can grow. But it is a tough division, so I'm very much taking a wait. I'm going to enjoy watching. If the team is exciting and performs well, then you know I'll have a good time watching them. If not, then I don't know. I'll have to tune into golf or something. We'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah, I don't know if you caught yesterday. That was a fun tournament to watch at the end there, Max. So I was rooting for Max Homa because he blew a 3.5-foot putt on 18 to force the playoff, but he came through against a very tough competitor, Tony Finau. But hey, listen, I think the Mets are going to have a pretty good year, no question about it. And final one, do you think Sam Darnold is still a New York Jet in the next couple of weeks? What do you think there?
Uh, you know, I don't know how. I mean, you know, the guy has been, you know, beat up, and, you know, the speculation's been crazy. He's got to go. He's got to go. He can't be successful in New York. He needs a new place. I don't know how you go back from that, whether it's him psychologically going back from that to, you know, being the starting quarterback for the Jets. But, you know, one way or another, I don't think so. You know, it's, you know, either they make a trade with the Texans, I don't know kind of where that's at, or they draft a quarterback. But I and, you know, it's unfortunate because I liked him. I'm going to you know, chalk him up to another, you know, promising quarterback that the Jets just didn't handle right. Hopefully things get better, Jay. But you know what? And one day I will be able to root for the Yankees and the Giants and be happy all the time like you. One day. I don't know when that is, but one day I will.
Nice to dream, isn't it? It's nice to dream. Sir, it is always a pleasure to have you. You know that. And we look forward to talking with you in March. So you stay well now.
You too, Jay. Best wishes.